Talk Cheese.
Recorded live.
Hello, this is William Fink for Eli James, and this is the Voice of Christian Israel. Good morning, everybody. It is Sunday, January 16th, 2011. Eli will be back next week, prayerfully on Friday. We will pick up our Jeremiah series, and on Saturday, we will pick up our Revelation series. Today, I have Greg Howard with me, and we are going to begin discussing the Testament of Joseph from the 12 Testaments. I'm sorry, the Testaments of the 12 Patriarchs. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Bill. How you doing?
Hello. Praise Yahweh. I'm fine. How are we?
Doing all right. You know, before we even get into the Testament of Joseph, which, by the way, is really, I've enjoyed going through this series with Eli, and I think you and I did another one as well. Might have been Judah. It was either Levi or Judah. It was one of the main ones. But Joseph, being one of the, you know, main patriarchs of the 12, he had a lot to say, a lot of history about him. And but on a slightly different subject, I spend a lot of time studying the, for lack of a better term, the conspiracy in the world. And I don't like that term because that term seems easily dismissed, but it seems like a good term sometimes. And I came across this document recently. There's actually a letter written in the year 1492, and I found it to be very fascinating. I just wanted to read a couple points in it. It was a, it says, in the year 1492, am I coming in okay? Can you hear me all right?
Well, you're a little low to me, actually. I don't know how you are in the forum.
I just turned my phone up a little bit to see if that'll help. But this was a letter written in the year 1492. It says, when Camor, chief rabbi of Spain, wrote for advice to the Grand Sanhedrin located in Constantinople, he received the following instructions. This, again, the year 1492 here. It says, beloved brethren in Moses, we have received your letter in which you tell us of the anxieties and misfortunes which you are enduring. We are pierced by as great pain to hear it as yourselves. The advice of the grand satraps and rabbis is the following. And he gives them a few points there, and I found these to be very, very interesting. Let me just read them. I'll go through them real quick. As for what you say that the king of Spain obliges you to become Christian, do it, since you cannot do otherwise. As for what you say about the command to despoil you of your property, make your sons merchants, that they may despoil little by little the Christians of theirs. As for what you say about making attempts on your lives, make your sons doctors and apothecaries, that they may take away Christian lives. As for what you say of their destroying your synagogues, make your sons canon and clerics in order that they may destroy their churches. As for the many other vexations you complain of, arrange that your sons become advocates and lawyers, and see that they always mix in affairs of state, that by putting Christians under your yoke, you may dominate the world and be avenged on them. Do not swerve from this order that we give you, because you will find by experience that, humiliated as you are, you will reach the actuality of power. This is signed, Prince of the Jews of Constantinople. A small insight into the Jewish mindset back in the late 1400s, early 1500s.
When is this actually written? What is the provenance of this?
In the year 1492, Jews apparently being persecuted by the King of Spain, writing to the Jewish Sanhedrin in Constantinople for advice.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's interesting. That's If I'd like to have that, if you can send me a link to that or something in the email later, I
will
appreciate that.
I'll send it to you. Is that not really amazingly prophetic as to what's exactly going on today? One of the main ones that struck me was, as for what you say of their destroying your synagogues, make your sons canon and clerics in order that they may destroy their churches.
And that's exactly what happened during during that period. That's exactly what happened. A lot of Murano Jews made their way into the church. That's the Jesuits were founded. The Jesuits are a huge vehicle for the conspiracy.
Yes.
That they seem to be behind all of the revolutions and the perversion of Masonry and the turning of Masonry into a vehicle for the promotion of the goals that are outlined in the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, but I mean, there was, you know, they don't know exactly when the protocols were written. I mean, they were discovered, you know, around the turn of the century, around 1901, 1902, right in there. But who knows when they were really written. But it's obvious this mindset goes back hundreds of years before that. That's such a clear statement, you know. He even advises them, become a Christian. Obviously, it's no real Christian. It's become a false Christian to infiltrate, you know. Make your sons merchants. Make them doctors and pharmacists, that they may take away Christian lives, you know. And, of course, we have here advocates and lawyers, and see that they always mix in affairs of state to dominate Christians. Put Christians under their yoke. And that's exactly what we see right now in every white nation in the world. You know, our own nation is probably the best example that we're the most familiar with. This is exactly what we see. You know, the majority of our judges are Jews. You know, our Supreme Court now is, you know, vastly more Jewish than what the population would represent. Who can even number the Jewish advisors surrounding Obama? Clearly, we're talking a lot, you know, and Jewish doctors, Jewish pharmacists.
Well, every president, they basically absconded our government in 1913, but every president since Franklin Roosevelt has been absolutely surrounded with Jewish advisors.
Right. Some of them probably were, you know, cryptic Jews themselves, or if they weren't, they may as well have been with, you know, all the Jewish influence around them. The classic, you know, Gentile front man, so to speak, doing what he's told. Clearly Obama is one of those. Probably doesn't have a single original thought in him. Does exactly what he's told to do.
Well, I'm sure. I'm sure he's just a puppet.
Yeah, clearly a puppet. So, I mean, our situation, but I found that this document fascinating because of the historical date, back in the 1400s, this was the mindset.
Well, you know, by the time of the Inquisition, Jews had already basically taken over the Catholic Church. I mean, it's I can't go back much further than this because I'm really not a scholar of the Middle Ages, and I admit that. But the Borgias that supplied one pope to the church in the 15th century, they were basically a crime family, and the De Medicis are a Jewish family of doctors who became bankers, who supplied three popes to the Catholic Church in the beginning of the 16th century.
Yeah.
And that is when the entire social construct of Christianity began to change, because it was during that period that loaning money at usury became acceptable in the church. Well, what the hell would you expect when you have bankers for popes?
Yeah. And, you know, in here where they specifically give the advice about making your sons canon and clerics, that they may destroy their churches. I mean, the term Judeo-Christianity, you know, clearly applies here. And you can only wonder how many of these pastors preaching all this universalistic nonsense and rapture and the Jews are the chosen ones and all of this. I only wonder how many of them are Jews, not just influenced by Jews, but probably Jews, them actual DNA, you know, devil Jews in the flesh.
Well, that was the whole struggle of opening the little book, Revelation chapter 10. Christians have to examine the Bible, not the words of men, but the Bible, and measure all the words of men against what the Scripture says.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we the words of men are going to steer us astray. I mean, as much as I appreciate even the scholarly people in Identity, I try to always verify what they say. If I have any question on it, I dig in for myself and see, is this the conclusion I'm coming to? You know, I think it behooves all of us to be Bible students. You know, I know it does for us because very few people believe what we believe. So we better be well-grounded in Scripture on it for our own sake, let alone being able to, you know, explain it to somebody else that would question us, you know. I mean, we would be considered pretty radical by mainstream Christianity, and we are. And, you know, I've satisfied myself that what we preach is absolutely the truth. And I know you have as well. And, you know, I really appreciate the fact that we understand who we are in this world, because not many people do. But I was fascinated by that document. I'll send it to you later on. I'm still irritated. My headphones conked out on me. You know, now I got to hold a phone to my ear, so it kind of limits what else I can do. But I'll send that to you later today.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I'd like to see that, and I'll probably investigate it.
But this is how Jews thought hundreds of years ago. You know, they're such infiltrators, and I've always been amazed. And I don't want to call myself a Jewologist, a studier of the Jew, but I am a studier of the Jew. I think all of us are. We want to know, you know, we want to know a lot about them because clearly we're in their sights, and I think we're naive if we don't want to understand as much about them and their methods as we can possibly know. And this really was an eye-opener to me, because I know this is how they think now. But to find out this is how they thought hundreds of years ago, and they've had hundreds and hundreds of years to practice this deception and this strategy of putting themselves in high places and insinuating themselves into government positions and judgeships and doctors and attorneys and obviously financiers and, you know, all the positions of authority and of influence, they're in tremendous control of it now.
Well, you know, they call the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion a forgery, and they never called it a fake, as far as I know. They call it a forgery, which means that it's a document that we're not supposed to have, right?
Yeah.
it's an unauthorized copy. That's what a forgery is. That the,
yeah, a good point. They never did say, oh, that somebody wrote that. Some anti-Semite just made that up.
As Henry Ford said, if the documents of the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion are a forgery, and they're all, then how is all this thing how is all this stuff happening? And basically, that's what he said. And he said that in the International Jew, where he has a lot of quotes from the Protocols. And I just published the condensed version of that. I found a copy of it and published it on a Saxon Messenger. It was actually supplied to me by some of our British friends, right?
That is a hard document to read start to finish. You know the story of the guy that could only translate it for an hour at a time because it was so evil it was freaking him out to, you know, really translate it. I find a similar response when I read it. I can only read it in I can't read it start to finish. It's too evil. You know, it just, I can only read a couple, two or three at a time, and then I just almost have to walk away from it. It's like you're touching the mind of Satan when you read that. Probably are touching the mind of Satan there.
Well, you're touching the mind of Satan if you pick up a People magazine today, too, and read it, right?
Yeah, but that seems a little more palatable. That's the deceptive mind of Satan. I guess we find that easier to touch. Your destruction of our race mind of Satan is the Protocols. And that really hits home to me because I consider myself an observant person, and I observe what goes on around me in the world, more so now than ever, now that I know who the players are. If you don't know the players, you don't know what's going on. You know, you just kind of see little bits and pieces. You see the dots, but you don't connect them because you don't know who the players are. If you understand the Jew and, you know, you understand their strategy and their mindset and their ultimate goal, and a lot of things begin to make sense that you see around you in this world, you know, and you just really see all these crazy chaos events how not so much chaos at all, but they're part of the Jewish strategy to bring the world to a point where they can make this world their one world government kingdom. You know, ultimately stealing from our race the dominion that was promised to us by Yahweh and originally given to Adam for Adam to have dominion in this world. The Jew, by hook or by crook, is going to have it their own way. Obviously, Yahweh isn't going to give it to them, so they're going to have to steal it on their own, and they know we're the biggest obstacle, so they're looking to get rid of most, if not all of us, along the way somewhere, maybe keep a few of us around to do their bidding and mix their DNA with so they don't, you know, completely warp out with their inbreeding. So I suppose some would call that an anti-Semitic rant. I wouldn't call it that.
Well, it's not anti-Semitic. It's anti-Antichrist. There's a huge difference there, right?
I know. I was being facetious. They're masters of terminology, of course, you know, how they've changed even our language, our terminology, our translations of our Bibles.
They have changed our language to an incredible degree through
Absolutely.
Their media. And every single one of us has been raised up in their media for the most part, and we've been affected profoundly by it. And even if we've isolated ourselves from it as individuals, all of the people around us whom we've had intercourse with for our entire lives have also been adversely affected by this media. It can't be gotten away from. And we have to really, and it's hard, and I catch myself all the time falling into the traps of a Judaized English language.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole paradigm has to be torn down, because the entire paradigm that constructs the way we view things in life is built by Satan in our minds through their media and through the way they've affected us. And it's very, very powerful. That's why I believe Paul was very prophetic when he called Satan, when he called the enemies of God, the prince of the power of the air.
Yeah.
A statement which made absolutely no sense when Paul wrote it 1900 years ago.
We're surrounded by Satan. I mean, his children are everywhere, you know.
Well, absolutely, and we have to watch that, and we have to examine our positions constantly and keep ourselves in check. And when I say that, I mean as compared to Scripture. Scripture has to be our model. And once we put away a lot of the ideas that we've gained through the Jewish media and the Jewish-controlled society, that then their crimes become even more horrible and even more evident. So maybe we'd rather stay in ourselves, right? But no, it really opens up a whole different world to us.
Well, when we really see how conquered this world is, I marvel that we have the freedom we do. I think they're trying to, you know, quickly tighten screws on it here. It seems obvious from multiple angles of observing. But there's not much they don't control at this point, you know, or have the ability to purchase. You know, the wealth that they control is unimaginable. I mean, if they want to buy it, they can buy it. So pretty much all of us are under their financial power. Even if we're debt-free, we're paying taxes on something. We're paying property taxes on something. If we're lucky enough to own our house outright, we still have to continue to pay, you know. We pay. They control us. We're all slaves of usury and debt. They've mastered that system after centuries, you know. While they themselves can just, you know, print trillions of dollars and siphon off enough that, you know, doesn't concern them paying interest on anything. Kind of crazy. You know, to this little document that I read earlier, I probably would add one more point. Make your sons university presidents and professors, and your sons teachers in schools, so that you can continue to destroy the minds of the young whites in their most impressionable ages. You know, going back to how our language has been changed and how we're so influenced by that. You know, we have all these organizations, National Education Association, completely dominated by Jews. The teacher unions dominated by Jews. You know, they completely control the education process of white children. Of course, they send their own kids to, you know, the Jewish schools. Who knows what goes on there? But our own schools are completely dominated by Jews. Curriculums. That's why we have all this homosexual nonsense being taught in schools. And Heather has two mommies and on and on and on and on. You know, just rotting the minds of young white children, destroying them at their most precious, impressionable age. It should make all of us insane to consider it. I hope it's at least annoying a few people today. I assume it is.
Well, we have to examine the scripture, examine our language, examine true Anglo-Saxon cultural traditions, and we have to try to ground ourselves in the truth on a solid foundation and stand there and resist the fiery darts of Satan.
Doing that,
it is girding yourself with the full armor of Yahweh.
Yeah. I mean, in essence, we have to love the law of Yahweh. That's our, the law is our refuge in a sense. Yahweh's, that is our refuge. That is Yahweh's will for us. If you want to know the will of Yahweh, study his law. His will become clear. I mean, we have to love his law. We have to love each other, and just like you said, stand in this time. And we live in maybe one of the most difficult times it's ever been to stand, I believe. You know, I'm not a big guy calling dates, but it certainly does seem like the consummation of this age. Certainly, it's closer now than it's ever been. I will say that. That's what I'll say. And it does seem like the, you know, we could perhaps see this age consummated, maybe, maybe not, I don't know. But I know it's harder to be a Christian probably right now than at any time in history, and certainly to proclaim the truth that we proclaim.
Well, absolutely. And the Internet is a microcosm of society, and we have the Jewish trolls chasing us here and posting slanders in this forum all the time. That's the same as a Jew walking into a church and screaming out Sarah Silverman-type epithets concerning Christ, right? And they do it all the time. Whenever you see an assembly of Christians being besieged by antichrists, you know that you can identify Satan. It's very simple.
Yeah, they are ultimately destroyers. I was recently reading in the book of Revelation, chapter 11, verse 17 and 18. It says, actually, this is, and the 24 elders which sat before Elohim on their seats fell upon their faces and worshipped Elohim, saying, "We give thee thanks, O Yahweh, El Shaddai, which art and was and art to come, because you have taken to thee thy great power and have reigned. And the nations were angry, and thy wrath has come, and the time of the dead, that they should be judged, and that thou shouldest give reward unto thy servants, the prophets, and to the saints, and them that fear thy name, small and great, and shouldst destroy them which destroy the earth." And to me, that is the epitome of Jews. They are destroyers. And here they're described as those that destroy the earth.
Well, right, a Christian that disagreed with what we were saying would go away and go on his own and found his own Christian assembly or find a different Christian assembly and seek to build somewhere else.
Yeah.
A Christian who did not agree with us would not try to destroy what we are doing.
Yeah, he would go somewhere else.
And we're told to build the kingdom of Yahweh, and yeah, we're told to be the shining city on the hill.
Yeah, these trolls.
And vengeance is Yahweh's. Vengeance belongs to God.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. I guess the connection I'm making with this verse, "shouldst destroy them which destroy the earth," and just even going back to that document that I was talking about earlier, you sense they're destroying nature there. You know, destroying the Christians of their wealth, of their lives. You know, make your sons doctors that they may take away Christian lives. You know, destroy their churches by making your sons clerics. You know, this is a race of destroyers. they are those that destroy the earth. They, certainly the enmity in Genesis 3:15, they've never forgotten it. They've never strayed from that prophesied way that they were prophesied to have. That enmity's been there in them from that time to right now. I don't know what our problem is. We've just been hoodwinked so much, you know, we don't even know that we should have enmity toward them. I say we, I don't mean us. And we're the small handful that actually understands it. By and large, our race, you know, most of the, you ask the most average white person, who is a Jew? Define what a Jew is. They have no idea. You know, they can't even come up with two or three sentences to describe what is a Jewish person.
Well, is it a race or is it a religion? And no people have any idea that it's really both. It's a genetic strain. They're not a pure race by any means. They are the most mixed race in the world. I like to say, and I've said it before, that if you take all the DNA of the entire world and put it in a blender, when you pour it out on the floor, what you end up with is a Jew.
That's good. I haven't heard that. Spoken
now,
of a true Jewologist.
Now, and that can be shown to be true from their history and from all of their travels. But they are also a religion. They are not even one religion, but an amalgamation of religions, because Marxism is basically a religion. It's an economic social religion, and it's Jewish. Humanism, secular humanism, is Jewish. And this ticks off a lot of so-called white nationalists. Paganism is Jewish. The pagan religions of Europe came from the ancient Canaanites of the Old Testament.
Yeah. Well, you know, and they use this kind of confusion on purpose many times, as you well know. I mean, a lot of these people, when a Jew will try to hide themselves from being a Jew, if it eventually comes out, well, I don't practice Judaism, so I'm really not a Jew anymore. Yeah, okay. You know, that's like saying a dog that doesn't bark is no longer a dog because he doesn't bark. He was born a dog. I mean, I define them kind of like you do. Mostly, I view them in terms of a DNA strain, whether they practice Judaism or not. I mean, let's face it, tons of them are probably practicing Christianity, whether true or false, we can say, obviously false. But if they were born Jewish, it doesn't matter what they practice. They are a Jew. That's it. And that DNA is the ultimate marker for them, in my opinion. And there's no getting away from that, no matter what they say, no matter what their practice is. And fortunately,
well, they claim their existence, throughout their existence, they have been adverse to Christianity. They have plainly sought to destroy all of the civilization and the worldly morality that Christianity brings to our society. Now, if they were really anti-racist, and if they were really open to all the ideas of men, then why do they seek to destroy Christianity?
Yeah, absolutely. There's very little coexistence in them.
Well, exactly. And the Jew idea of freedom for all is freedom for all as long as you think and act like a Jew.
Right, or at least unless you have the Jews dominate you and control all your finances and run everything, and you know that's the Jewish idea of a society where the Jew runs
have
all
secularized, and owns. They have secularized the debate, but secularism is another word that fools us, right? Because secularism comes from a Latin word that means worldly. Christians are supposed to get out of the world. So why would Christians want to ever give any credence to secularism?
Why would we?
Christians are told to hate the world. Therefore, Christians must hate all things secular, and Christians must see the Jews have tricked us into believing that secular is a common non-religious ground. secular is not a common religious ground, because Christians are told to hate the world, to separate themselves from the world. Becoming secular is becoming anti-Christian.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I've been doing a lot of reading lately in some of the writings of Baruch. Baruch, you know, he was a contemporary of Jeremiah, and he was the scribe of Jeremiah. And he wrote a book known as The Apocalypse of Baruch, or Second Baruch. Really an incredible book. Some of the visions that he recorded were amazing. But he talks about at the very end, at the consummation of the age, and Enoch discusses this as well, that there will be great deceit. The way of truth will be hidden. You know, few people will find the way of truth in the final times. And it seems obvious that that's what we're living in right now, that the way of truth, even though there's zillions of Christians and churches, and who can guess how many church services are going on around the country right now as we're here, but where is the truth today being proclaimed? You know, that the white race are the descendants of the seed of Abraham. Who is proclaiming that truth this morning in 10, 20, 50,000 church meetings going on right now? Is there a single person there that would proclaim the white race is the continuation of Abraham's seed, a pure seed on the earth?
Well, of course not, because when a Jew says that he's when the Jews say they're God's chosen people, it's holy. When white people say, no, we're God's chosen people, it's racist.
Yeah. The truth is hidden. Just like Baruch said, the way of truth will be hidden.
And we let the Jew browbeat us with these words that basically have no meaning, because racism, as the Jew describes it, racism is love. Racism is the will and the desire to perpetuate and to preserve God's original creation. Anti-racism is anti-God, because it's the will and the desire to destroy and break down the kinds or types in God's original creation. It doesn't matter if you believe that God created the non-white races or not. Racism is hate. Anti-racism is hate. Racism is the will to preserve that original creation.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous of a double standard it is that any other race could begin to proclaim that they are the race of Abraham's seed on the earth. You know, I'm sure you've come across the Black Yahweh movement. If you ever want a good laugh, look up some of their stuff on YouTube. The Black, you know, that Yahweh's elect are the blacks on the earth. It's amusing to say the least. But nobody's calling them racist. Jews essentially are proclaiming this for themselves.
Well, the Jews have taught them to do that, to discredit us. They love to throw in all these straw men and all these shills. And all these what appears to be choices, right? That what appears to be choices, and that they're not choices at all, because they're all anti-Christian.
Yeah, it's easy to see how the Jew has colored society to the point where we have our race has been painted into a corner, and every way we turn, we run into a wall of resistance. You know, any way we want to promote our race, meet as a race, love our own race, teach our children to only marry and procreate with others of our same race, the very things that any other race would be allowed to do, and no one would even blink. Yet if we do these things, or even want to celebrate our culture to some extent, or our descent from Europe, we are instantaneously smacked down severely. And made to feel like we're the worst kind of evil person. So it's obvious there's an evil power behind that. The Jew is pulling all those strings. I mean, just a continual reminder that all these forces of evil are arrayed against us specifically, you know, and these other races clearly are being used to damage us and our children. I go absolutely crazy when I see some beautiful young white girl dating any kind of black athletic football kind of guy, or any, you know, doesn't matter if he's a football player or not. If I see a white girl dating any kind of Negro or Mexican, man, that drives me out of my mind because I see the satanic strategy behind it. I know there's a Jew behind the scenes making that happen somewhere. If not directly, then indirectly through the changing of society's thinking and teaching these kids at an early age that it's fine to do this kind of thing. You know? Maddening to see it happen, to see our race being destroyed one young person at a time.
Well, that's absolutely true. And most of it's out of our own ignorance. And even when we claim to know what we refuse to read, and we're still ignorant, and when we want to read, we don't read the right things. Very few people actually strive to build their house, as Yahshua Christ said, on that solid foundation of bedrock.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we hear nice things, and we get taken away by them because they sound good, and we get led down a rabbit hole all the time. There's only one rock, and that's Christ, period. End of story. Stick to his word, and you'll never have a problem.
Depart from that word. We get our various opportunities to get together like this. You know, we're so easily led astray on our own. It's easy to follow a rabbit trail, you know, but meeting at least even these online meetings, they have a lot of value. I think they keep us calibrated to the truth. If we get off, you know, we tend to, you know, get back on the path here. I mean, let's face it, on our own, we're just not that strong, really, most of us. We need each other.
Well, absolutely, we do need each other, because we're each, as Peter describes, we are each only stones in the building. None of us are the building.
Right.
And
yeah,
A stone by itself only gets used as a doorstop, right?
Yeah.
A stone by itself isn't too useful. And uh-huh. Even if it gets thrown, it can only hit one target at a time, right?
Yeah. And again, you know, look how hard they have made it for Christian Identity saints to meet together in person. I mean, I remember that time, you know, we tried to have a small little gathering up in Binghamton, you know, get together and share our faith and fellowship together. Remember how crazy that was, you know?
Well, right. They saw it on Eli's website, and they immediately pulled the Antifa out of their pockets, the Jewish College Anti-Fascist League. And fascism to the Jew, that's a lot of people don't understand that either. And there's some videos on my website that demonstrate it, and there's plenty of videos on YouTube that demonstrate it, where the Jews in the street call Christians Nazis.
Yeah, I've seen them.
They'll take the average, everyday, mainstream, universalist Christian and call him a Nazi. That's what they really think about Christianity.
Oh, yeah, it's if you want to use their own terminology, they're the most racist people.
Right. To them, Nazi is the worst slur that you could imagine in the mind of a Jew that he could throw at a non-Jew.
Right. Yeah, I've seen some of those with those disgusting rabbi-looking creatures.
Well, right. But the people that use those terms, that's the everyday Jew in the street. That's not even the rabbi. So imagine what they're hearing from their rabbis.
Yeah. You know, and
absolutely repulsive. And what's more repulsive is that Christians don't see it.
I still remember all those stupid young, foolish white kids protesting across the street, completely clueless, with no understanding that they were being tools of Jews. You know, I doubt there were any Jewish kids out there. There's plenty of young, stupid white kids out there that would be influenced to go and do their dirty work for them. Probably no Jew would get his hands dirty out there doing that.
Well, how many Jews can fit in the Volkswagen?
How many?
When Christ returns, all of them.
That's good.
That will be Hitler's last laugh. Okay, are we going to get into this testament of Joseph today, or what?
I think that covers the introduction. Why don't we get into the testament of Joseph here a little bit? I did want to start with the reading of the blessing of Jacob in Genesis 49. Jacob, on his deathbed, was blessing all of his sons, knowing that the continuation of the seed line of Yahweh was going to come through these sons. So he obviously understood their importance, and he had a blessing for each one of them. And he had a particularly detailed blessing for Joseph. This is in Genesis 49, starting in verse 22. I can read it here. Joseph is a fruitful bough, by a wheel. His branches run over the wall. The archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him, and hated him, but his bow remained in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. For there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. By the God of your father who will help you, and by the Almighty who will bless you, with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies beneath, blessing of the breasts and of the womb, the blessings of your father have excelled the blessings of my ancestors. Up to the utmost bound of the everlasting hills, they shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him who is separate from his brothers. Praise Yahweh. What a great blessing on Joseph there by Jacob on his deathbed.
Right. Joseph was definitely the most favored, I believe, of Jacob, of all of Jacob's sons. And that's clear from the account as we see it in Genesis chapter, I believe it's chapter 37.
Mm-hmm.
The testament of Joseph is centered mostly around, of course, the events of Genesis chapter 39, which explains the entire discourse between Joseph and his position in Pharaoh's house, and the things that the Pharaoh's wife had done in order to try to seduce him, and he ends up in prison, right? And this testament of Joseph draws heavily on that. But yes, the blessing to Joseph, it is definitely because Joseph was the oldest boy of the son that Jacob really, of the wife, I mean, that Jacob really wanted. Rachel, he loved Rachel. He didn't love Leah, and Leah gave him six sons, right? Well, Leah was the wife he was stuck with. Rachel is the wife that he wanted. And we should remember that, right? That's a good analogy, that Leah had six sons, that the wife he was stuck with, but he really loved the wife that he wanted, and that was Rachel. And that's why I believe Joseph was especially favored by Jacob.
Yeah, and no doubt especially despised by some of the other brothers, because, you know, I'm sure it wasn't hard to figure out that he was the favorite of Jacob. And that probably didn't sit well with them. Let's get into this a little bit of the testament of Joseph here. And, you mentioned that it does go into quite a bit of detail on the seduction of Joseph, or the attempted seduction of Joseph, by the wife of the Egyptian here. Let me read a little bit. Let's jump in and commentate. You have something to say? Jump in. A copy of the testament of Joseph, when he was about to die, he called his sons and his brethren together and said to them, "My brethren and my children, hearken to Joseph, the beloved of Israel. Give ear, my sons, unto your father. I have seen in my life envy and death. Yet I went not astray, but persevered in the truth of the Lord. These, my brethren, hated me, but the Lord loved me. They wished to slay me, but the God of my fathers guarded me. They let me down into a pit, and the Most High brought me up again. I was sold into slavery, and the Lord of all made me free. I was taken into captivity, and his strong hand succored me. I was beset with hunger, and the Lord himself nourished me. I was alone, and God comforted me. I was sick, and the Lord visited me. I was in prison. My God showed favor unto me in bonds, and he released me. Slandered, and he pleaded my cause. Bitterly spoken against by the Egyptians, and he delivered me. envied by my fellow slaves, and he exalted me. So this is Joseph's testimony here on his deathbed, and he begins to get in here into the whole situation. We'll probably skip, I don't think we need to read all of this. Not that it's not good, but it's just, it's a lot of detail. And if you ever want more detail on the whole temptation of Joseph, there's a lot of information and detail in here that isn't in the Genesis account of this story. It says, "And this chief captain of Pharaoh entrusted to me his house, and I struggled against a shameless woman, urging me to transgress with her. But the God of Israel, my father, delivered me from the burning flame. I was cast into prison, I was beaten, I was mocked, but the Lord granted me to find mercy in the sight of the keeper of the prison. For the Lord doth not forsake them that fear him, neither in darkness, nor in bonds, nor in tribulations, nor in necessities. For God is not put to shame as a man, nor as the son of man is he afraid, nor as one that is earthborn is he affrighted. But in all those things doth he give protection, and in divers ways doth he comfort, though for a little space he departeth to try the inclination of the soul. In 10 temptations he showed me approved, and in all of them I endured, for endurance is a mighty charm, and patience giveth many good things." You have any comments at this point?
That there's not a whole lot to add to this, right? I mean, it's basically he's talking about the temptations that he had undergone in the Pharaoh's house, and we have to remember that Joseph was a young man when this happened. But first, let me say, I have to throw this disclaimer in here, and I know I don't want to rain on your testament of the Patriarchs Parade, right? But I had to do this when we did the Testament of Judah, and that is that I do not accept this as entirely canonical. I do understand that it is part of a very old tradition, and that the testaments of the patriarchs are very useful because they reflect, at the very least, they reflect Christian values and ideas from at least the time of the 2nd century B.C. We know these testaments of the patriarchs existed from archaeology probably about 150 years before Christ. How much of these testaments are older than that is very highly debatable. Now this testament of Joseph in chapter 1, and I'm looking at the Old Testament pseudepigrapha edited by James H. Charlesworth. It is noted by the translators that the focus here shifts between the first and third person in the grammar of the narration. And that's a problem which indicates that it may have been rewritten at one time, but from an older tradition. And that's, I just wanted to throw that disclaimer in just so that my position on the testaments of the patriarchs is not misunderstood. That the right, this is definitely expounding on Joseph's temptation and his perseverance and the fact that we have refuge in God, and this is a very Christian reflection, right? That Yahweh and Paul explained it, and the other apostles touched on this in their epistles, that Yahweh tries his children, but he doesn't try us without also giving us the means which we need to survive those trials.
Right.
And this is making a clear point that Yahweh, this could have been, Paul could have drawn his discourse on that topic right from this very testament, because it's so close where it says, and in many various ways, God offers us assistance in the times of our trials.
Yeah, I it is related a lot, isn't it? You can kind of see some similarities.
It's the same belief system, right? I mean, it's the same conviction, basically, that we attempt to also stand in today. It is the way. We have to understand that this life is for trials, and that we will be tried by God if we are indeed children and not bastards, as Son says, right? As Paul says.
Right. Let me read this next paragraph, and then I have a few comments, and when Joseph begins to get into this matter of fornication with the woman. I have some notes here. Were you done?
Yes.
Okay. How often did the Egyptian woman threaten me with death? How often did she give me over to punishment and then call me back and threaten me when I was unwilling to company with her? She said to me, "Thou shalt be lord of me and all that is in my house. If thou wilt give thyself unto me, thou shalt be as our master." But I remembered the words of my father, and going into my chamber, I wept and prayed unto the Lord, and I fasted in those 7 years, and I appeared to the Egyptians as one living delicately, for they that fast for God's sake receive beauty of face. And if my Lord were away from home, I drank no wine, nor for 3 days did I take my food, but I gave it to the poor and sick. And I sought the Lord early, and I wept for the Egyptian woman of Memphis, for very unceasingly did she trouble me. For also at night she came to me under pretense of visiting me, and because she had no male child, she pretended to regard me as a son. So I prayed to the Lord, and she bare a male child. And for a time she embraced me as a son, and I knew it not, but later she sought to draw me into fornication. And when I perceived it, I sorrowed unto death. And when she had gone out, I came to myself and lamented for her many days, because I recognized her guile and her deceit. And I declared unto her the words of the Most High, if haply she would turn from her evil lust. And as I was reading this and you know, just jotting down my thoughts as I was reading it, I just thought, you know, the enemy's strategy has not changed toward our race and our people. And we've seen in these various testaments over and over and over again warnings against fornication and, you know, warnings against mixing our race, you know, basically being with someone of another race in a sexual manner. And it's exactly, you know, what she was trying to do here, knowing how destructive that is to us. I mean, there's no quicker way to bring a Christian life to a screeching halt, a white Christian, than for them to commit fornication with one of another race.
Well, absolutely. And this isn't, I don't see this Egyptian woman actually as one of another race. She's almost certainly an Adamic woman of the tribe of Ham, but to commit this act of adultery with another man's wife, with the Pharaoh's wife, and, mm-hmm. and this Pharaoh, that this is the good Pharaoh that knew Joseph, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the Pharaoh that arose that knew not Joseph, that's after Joseph died, and that Pharaoh was actually, he very likely was of a mixed race, because some of these pharaohs in the interim had taken wives of the Hittites, who were a branch of the Canaanites, right?
Right.
But this pharaoh here with Joseph, we're in the 17th dynasty, and we are with either it can probably, Clifton has written on this on his website, we are probably with the pharaoh Khamos, who is the last Egyptian pharaoh of the 17th dynasty, or his predecessor, who was called Tau II, Tau II the Brave, or Sekhenenre, Sekhenenre, Tau, Tao, the Second. And one of these pharaohs are very likely this pharaoh of Joseph's time. Remember that the children of Israel, a lot of people want to say it's 400 years, and it's not. The children of Israel were only in Egypt, if we really observe the biblical account, for approximately six generations. It was 400 years. The 400 years was from the promise and the call of Abraham to the giving of the law at Sinai, was 430 years. But not the sojourn in Egypt. The sojourn of Egypt was only a part of that. And if we look at the genealogies, it was clearly only about six generations, which isn't long at all.
Yeah.
And that last pharaohs of the 17th dynasty at the time that we're in, and it seems that the Egyptian the Egyptians, I don't think there's any evidence that they had been taking Hittite queens and princesses for pharaohs yet, for their wives. That began in the 18th dynasty, and I believe that began with Thutmose I or Thutmose II, and that can be pretty much established. But still, it's a horrible act of adultery. And in a way, it is fornication because it's illicit sex with another man's wife. But it's to violate that this man took, this pharaoh took Joseph into his home and made him the ruler over his house. He made him his chief steward over his entire household, which includes it would in effect include a great deal of power in the kingdom. And that's an incredible amount of trust this man put into Joseph, and Joseph is going to violate this man's wife and violate that amount of trust. How could Yahweh trust you to place you over any portion of his kingdom in the life to come if you violate his trust in this manner when he lays your fate so that you get appointed second in command of this pharaoh's house, and you violate this pharaoh's trust? It's what Christ says in the parable: He who is untrustworthy with a little will be untrustworthy with a lot, and he who is trustworthy with a little will also be trustworthy with a lot.
Yeah. Well, you know, this matter of sexual purity, again, with the age that we live in right now, I mean, it's such an age of sexual lust. And I mean, I trust that most of us here recognize that just about any TV media, these TV shows, all they do is promote fornication and race mixing. Just looking for the naive among us to, you know, saunter up and, you know, the opportunities seem to be out there if you're looking. And, you know, it reminds me of the I don't remember which proverb it is, 4 or 5, about the young man who, like a bird that goes to the fowler and then gets a dart struck through its liver. You know, that's a white Adamite Christian that commits fornication.
Well, I'm going to give an example, and this is nasty, and I apologize for it in advance, but we have to realize the impact of lust and what it does to our society. And the absolutely worst case I can see in society today is this whore named Heidi Klum. She's a beautiful young blonde German woman who marries a Negro, and it came out publicly recently that she married him because he had a large penis. That is the epitome of decadence in our society, because she gave away her birthright for the lust of the flesh, and she admits it.
Well, I hadn't read that. I'm glad I didn't read that.
And her children are bastards, and they are destroyed.
Yeah. That's the unpardonable sin. She's part of it.
Well, that is, it is, I apologize. It's decadent. It's nasty. It's perverse. But that is the sick state of our society today. And that's the way these people think. And that's the way these mainstream anti-Christian, non-Christian people think. That is what the Jew has achieved by removing Christianity from our society.
Absolutely, Bill. And that's a Jewish victory right there. You know, a beautiful white woman, her DNA line just destroyed. Now she's birthing, you know, mongrel creatures that are in a sense meaningless. And yet being held up as an example of celebrating diversity. It's pretty sad. But it's a Jewish victory, and that's the kind of thing that they have brought about through, I don't know, how generations or certainly many decades of teaching this kind of thing. I mean, I'm in my 50s, so I've seen a tremendous amount of stuff that has changed in the last 20 or 30 years. Just from a societal point of view of just general morality. I mean, when I was a kid, 20, you know, 10, 15 years old, interracial dating was just about non-existent. Once in a while, you'd see a mixed couple together, There was also almost universal condemnation toward that. It was just, we don't do that. That's wrong. That's wrong. White girls don't go out with blacks. And, you know, skip ahead 30-some years later, we have this story. You know, this is how far the Jew has destroyed us, destroyed our society. Sad. They are destroyers, no doubt about it. Sometimes the destruction is so slow and gradual that we don't recognize what's going on around us. They're a very patient enemy, you know. They don't drop massive bombs and wipe us all out at once. It'll take a couple generations to slowly race mix us out of existence.
Well, they knew that they knew that they couldn't defeat us. They learned a long time ago that they couldn't defeat us head on. But I mean, they learned that when we threw the Turks out of Vienna, right?
Yeah.
But they've learned to very craftily that they can easily infiltrate and deceive us, and that goes back to the first sin in the Garden of Eden, right? The first sin of the Garden of Eden was a sin of infiltration and our fall in deception. Now, the second sin in the Garden of Eden was compromise. And if we compromise with the Jew, with the enemies of our God, then we're worse off than Adam, because we should have learned from his example.
Yeah. And just like in the garden, I think they've really focused on our women. Our women, you know, being more open to these kind of suggestions.
Well, if you read the Communist Manifesto, if you read the Communist Manifesto, the major philosophy in destroying the bourgeois civilization, what was in the promotion of the liberation of women, and what it achieved was it liberated our women from their fathers and from their brothers and from their husbands, so that the Jew could have our women to himself.
Right.
And that's a major foundational plank of the Communist Manifesto. That's its goal and purpose, is to liberate us from our women, or liberate our women from us. And
yeah, basically
that's what they've done. And
yeah.
They've done it. They've gotten all our women into the workplace now, and they're basically open game. It's like hunting season, 365 days a year.
Yeah. So a sad situation, and our women have bought into it, and now they're liberated, you know.
Well, we've lost the cultural wars of the 50s and 60s, so we don't and those wars really started in the 1920s, right? And we, because we've lost the cultural war, the Jew didn't have to bring a Soviet Russia against us or a Red China, as long as we continue to be the slave of the Jew.
Yeah, that's a good observation. You know, Russia they destroyed in a short time. This country, they just slow decay from within, so we're at this current point now where things are, you know, morality is almost unrecognizable.
Well, most Christian men back in the 40s, 50s, 60s have rolled over and played the whore for the Jew. And it's because we did not stand up for our society, then the Jew has prevailed. And we have today basically a Jewish society.
Oh, yeah, we have a Jewish society today. No doubt whatsoever. Jewish control, you know. Whatever.
There are no more Christian values, no more Aryan values being espoused in society. And when they are propounded, that they are shouted down as being racist.
Well, right. I mean, when the truth is proclaimed, and I'll just go out on a limb and say we're the ones proclaiming it, that trolls are sicked on us, ADL post things on us. You know, I'm sure we're monitored by all those little Jewish alphabet organizations, and, you know, we're going to be slammed. But the Christianity that's allowed to filter out to all the sheeple is Joel Osteen, Joyce Meyer.
Well, that's Judaism. That's Judaism. Yeah. That isn't Christianity. That's
the old flavor of it that they allow to be spread out to the masses, you know, the Crystal Cathedral, I mean, on and on. This, you know, all the, you know, and then once in a while they'll throw a Jimmy Swaggart in there and bring him down. I mean, just poisoning the well, as they've done for centuries, poisoning wells. Sad.
Well, that's all Judaism. If you look carefully at what they're preaching, this gospel of personal redemption and this gospel of personal wealth is really a gospel that is cut out of the cloth of the consumer society, which favors the Jewish corporations and the Jewish banks. And this gospel that they're preaching in these pulpits today encourages people to go out and work for the system and work for Satan and take loans out and engage in the usury society. And it's a gospel of worldliness that's absolutely anathema to everything Christian.
Well, you're right. It's a different flavor of Judaism. It's Judaism with a sugar coating on it, so it doesn't look like Judaism.
Well, if you were the chairman of the board of Walmart, it's exactly the gospel that you would want to preach to increase sales.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. You know, it's obviously not the truth. I mean, one quick look at any of the inhabitants of the pews listening to these people will tell you all you need to know. You know, got all kind of different blacks and Mexicans lining up in there, and there's no truth proclaimed in there. I don't know what it is. Once in a while, I listen to a couple minutes of one of them here and there, just, I don't know why, a morbid curiosity, just to hear what they're saying, you know. I can't take it for more than about 2 or 3 minutes. Joyce Meyer I can take for about 30 seconds. She freaks me out.
I don't know what she looks like. I only know what Joel Osteen looks like because somebody told me about his discourse on pork and unclean foods, and I was really shocked to see anybody in the mainstream actually coming out and saying that we shouldn't be eating those things. So I took advantage of that, and it's posted somewhere on Christogenia.
Yeah,
and it's a shame that Joel Osteen didn't care about the unclean creatures who were sitting in his audience.
It was actually a pretty good discourse on pork. It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. Anyway, just, you know, we kind of got off a little sidetrack there. But, you know, just the fact that all these patriarchs, fornication back then was seemingly the main strategy of the enemy to destroy us. And nothing has changed to today. It's just become more sophisticated now. And there's more opportunities, and it comes at us from so many different ways than maybe it used to. But it's all just looking to destroy us via sexual sin, and particularly with those of another race. You know, such a sophisticated strategy that we've seen in the last 20 or 30 years, the whole concept of diversity. And how that essentially is just one more avenue to open up fornication towards us, you know. I'm sure diversity isn't preached in other nations that aren't white nations. They probably don't even know what the word means. But in all the white nations, diversity is the order of the day. You have to embrace it. You know, you can't speak against it. Diversity is our strength. And, of course, if you're going to buy into that, then the next step is you know, marrying other races and having children with other races. And, you know, before you know it, there aren't any whites left in the country. Everybody's got a dark tan, you know. Of course, that would be their goal, I'm sure.
Well, that is their goal, that they want a brown world. And that's why they're trying to turn Jesus brown. That they're trying to actually convince people that Christ was a dark-skinned Arab. And they're doing that because they need a brown God for their brown world.
Yep, makes sense. They couldn't keep Christ white. And if everybody was brown, they'd want to brown him up a little bit as well.
And Negroes and Latinos and all the other Arab peoples of the world just love seeing a brown God molded in their image anyway.
Yep. I see where Mark wrote in the chat room here, diversity is a code word for white genocide. Yeah, that's well said.
Well, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, that's exactly
right. I don't see the Jew pushing diversity in India. I mean, I don't see a whole bunch of people migrating into India. I don't see the Jew pushing diversity in China. I mean, China has been promoted to this world economic power by the international Jewish merchants But they don't. They're not promoting diversity in China. Why isn't China? Why aren't Mexicans moving into China?
Yeah.
Well, why aren't Indians moving into China?
Yeah, I know. Only flooding the white nations with these dark.
And I mean, I understand that it's a fulfillment of scripture, and I've written heavily on that on my website. And Yahweh didn't say he was going to fill the Chinese with beasts. He said he was going to fill the house of Israel and the house of Judah with beasts.
Yeah.
So that proves right there that we are the children of Yahweh. We are the children of God. The white race, we are the children of God. We have fulfilled all those prophecies. And all those prophecies are being fulfilled in us. However, the fact that China is not being flooded with non-Chinese aliens is proof of the hypocrisy of the international Jew.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's clear that it's a very programmed assault against one race, and that's us. I mean, look what they've done in every single white nation. You could just go down the list. There's not a single white nation that hasn't been assaulted by this flooding with other races, you know, in the last 30, 40, 50 years. And it's ongoing to this very day. Insanity. You know, I mean, we recognize it, and the American people hate it, yet nothing's done about it. It just shows the control the Jew has. They could close that border in a day if they wanted to, you know. One day, that border could be closed. So, the assault continues. And at least we know the strategy. We see here that Joseph, you know, the assault was going on then. It's going on today. It's probably going to continue until Yahweh returns to this earth.
Well, you know, there's going to be an awakening at some point in the eyes of our race. However, the scripture truly shows that when that awakening occurs, we will also realize that Yahweh is our only hope. And that's because we rejected him as king 3,500 years ago. And our race has to learn that the only way that we could function and function properly and prosper is if we take him back and accept him as king.
Well, apparently things are going to be pretty bad when it gets to that point. So. I think we're going to be ready when that time comes. I mean, some of us, I believe, are ready now to accept him that way. You know, we've been shown a lot. I don't take that lightly, that we've been shown who we are. I praise Yahweh constantly for awakening me in these last times, showing me who I am in this world, who my true brothers and sisters in Yahshua are. And who they are not, you know. I still am amazed at the deception in Christendom today. Churches filled with other races carrying Bibles and praying and preaching sermons. And yet I see no ground in Scripture for them to even be able to claim the name of Yahshua Christ at all. You know, it's just the deception is that deep.
Well, if they were the children of Abraham, they would do the works of Abraham, right? It's that plain. I didn't see Abraham founding a bank. I didn't see Abraham loaning to usury to the Canaanites and enslaving them all. You know, I didn't see Abraham doing any of that stuff. I didn't see him doing anything. I didn't see any of the Israelites of the Old Testament doing the things that the Jews do. If the Old Testament were a Jewish book, it would be a banking manual. If Christ were a Jew, he would have been doing stand-up instead of parables.
That's good. Oh, man. Doing stand-up. That's a good one. I like it. Yeah. Instead, he went in and drove those rascals out of the temple, you know? They were whipping on them as they more than likely deserved completely, I'm sure. I'm still laughing. Christ didn't stand up if he was a Jew. That's great. Anyway, let's read on a little bit here. We're obviously not going to get through all this. What do we got? 10 minutes left. All right, well, we put a dent in it, and Eli and I can pick up the rest here I think I left off here at chapter 4. Often, therefore, did she flatter me with words as a holy man, and guilefully in her talk praise my chastity before her husband, while desiring to ensnare me when we were alone. For she lauded me openly as chaste, and in secret she said unto me, fear not my husband, for he is persuaded concerning thy chastity. For even should one tell him concerning us, he would not believe. Owing to all these things, I lay upon the ground and besought God that the Lord would deliver me from her deceit. And when she had prevailed nothing thereby, she came again to me under the plea of instruction, that she might learn the word of God. And she said unto me, if thou willest that I should leave my idols, lie with me, and I will persuade my husband to depart from his idols, and we will walk in the law of thy Lord. And I said unto her, the Lord willeth not that those who reverence him should be in uncleanness, nor doth he take pleasure in them that commit adultery, but in those that approach him with a pure heart and undefiled lips. But she held her peace, longing to accomplish her evil desire, and I gave myself yet more to fasting and prayer, that the Lord might deliver me from her. Such a perfect reaction to temptation of fornication here.
Well, right. This is a very young man. I mean, he must be in his 20s who has not yet had a wife, right?
Right.
And I remember being a teenager. It was impossible for me to resist. I mean, it's we men are weak, right? And weak.
Well, as he says later in this testament, she was a beautiful woman. Very attractive to look upon. And here it is later on. He says, she was very beautiful, splendidly adorned in order to beguile me. So, I mean, very attractive woman. And this is a man of Yahweh here that we're looking at. Your average Judeo-Christian pastor wouldn't have lasted real long against this. But Joseph says, I gave myself yet more to fasting and prayer that the Lord might deliver me from her. But you just see the insistence here over and over and over. She's throwing himself at Joseph as a young man, as you mentioned. And he lived a holy life, prayer and fasting. So it's quite touching to read this story. A lot of extra detail in here that is kind of left out of the Genesis account. Here you're really getting a feel for what's going on. And this wasn't just a one-time deal. She was, it looked like almost every day he was having to put up with this. So he had a real view of Yahweh here. Let me read on a little more here. What do we got? About 5 minutes. And again at another time she said unto me, if thou wilt not commit adultery, I will kill my husband by poison and take thee to be my husband. I therefore, when I heard this, rent my garments and said unto her, woman, reverence God and do not this evil deed, lest thou be destroyed. For know indeed that I will declare this thy device unto all men. She therefore, being afraid, besought that I would not declare this device. She departed, soothing me with gifts and sending to me every delight of the sons of men. And afterwards she sent me food mingled with enchantments. And when the eunuch who brought it to me, I looked up and beheld a terrible man giving me a sword, a dish with a sword. And I perceived that her scheme was to beguile me. This must have been some early pharmaceutical that was available.
They did have a much greater knowledge of the herbs and plants and what those things would do, and that was probably also to their benefit in healing, but it was to their detriment because it's recorded even as late as the 6th century AD that that women in Greece could eat of a certain plant and it would cause them to have a miscarriage. Okay, so abortion is not new, and neither is the morning after pill. But we see 2,000 years before that or better, we see the Rachel and Leah, and Rachel making a deal with Leah to get some of those mandrakes that she had, right? Right. So that she would have, I don't know if it was greater sexual prowess, or I would have to actually go back and read the account again to get the full sense of it. But the mandrakes definitely had something to do with her wanting to sleep with Jacob, right?
Right, yeah. So, yeah, we've lost a lot of that kind of knowledge. Yeah, now it's been substituted by, you know, pharmaceuticals, which more and more and more information is coming out that these things are just completely crazy. There was just an article a few days ago on the top 10 most dangerous pharmaceuticals out there. Half of them were antidepressants, maybe even more than half, based on reports of people doing crazy things while they were taking that medication. So best to avoid that stuff, if at all possible, no doubt about that. Let me read on a little bit. Maybe we can finish this paragraph, and it'll probably take us to the end of the time. And when he had gone out, I wept, nor did I taste that or any other of her food. So then after one day she came to me and observed the food and said unto me, why is it thou hast not eaten of the food? And I said unto her, it is because thou hast filled it with deadly enchantments. And how saidst thou, I came not near to idols, but to the Lord alone? Now therefore know that the God of my father hath revealed unto me by his angel thy wickedness. And I have kept it to convict thee, if haply thou mayest see and repent. But that thou mayest learn that the wickedness of the ungodly hath no power over them that worship God with chastity. Behold, I will take of it and eat before thee. And having so said, I prayed thus, that the God of my fathers and the angel of Abraham be with me, and ate. And when she saw this, she fell upon her face at my feet weeping. And I raised her up and admonished her, and she promised to do this iniquity no more. So, praise Yahweh. Joseph clearly was a young man that walked with Yahweh here, even to the point where he was willing to, you know, eat this food with enchantment just to show her, you have no power over me with this.
Well, all right. He had his faith in God. And when he has his faith in God, our bodies don't rule over us. And
yeah.
That's also that's also an instruction of Paul's in the epistles to the Corinthians.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so easy when these kind of temptations come along to give in. Obviously, he was probably tempted at some point, you know.
Well, that's because
man
Christians,
is not tempted.
Christians usually, I'm sorry. Christians usually only think about God when bad things happen to them, right? But when we want to feel good, we never think about God.
Yeah, we think of some amusements or sins.
And that opens us up to the dangers of lust.
Right. And, you know, there's plenty of that available now. The Jew has supplied no lack of those type of amusements. And you can sit in your office or your you know, open your computer up and find all kinds of satanic filth if you're so inclined. The Jews made it quite easy for all of us to fall. So we just, I don't know. I think we can learn from Joseph. He basically said no. But with prayer and fasting, he walked away from it.
Well, right, but now we live in a society that's entirely ensconced. It's saturated with adultery and fornication.
Yep. Everywhere we turn, it hits us in the face. So we just have to be on our guard. That's it. The Jew has just permeated our society with fornication, knowing, I think, that maybe we are, we have weaknesses in that area. Obviously we do, men and women both. And the Jew has filled our society with it. Everywhere we look, our resistance is beaten down to it.
Well, right. Lily brought up just like in the days of Noah, and that's exactly correct. And by that, we should know and pray that the end is near.
I think
because
so.
Because we want to be left behind, right?
We do. We don't want to be the ones taken.
No.
We want to be left behind. I just was thinking an article I read a couple days ago, a big splash on Elton John and the homosexual that he married, and they just recently adopted a young boy.
Absolutely repulsive.
Yeah, and they were showing all these pictures of them and family time, and it made my skin crawl to look at it and how they were normalizing it. And there wasn't a single word in there that it wasn't right or improper or, you know, it was just as if it was the most normal thing in the world that these two homosexuals should adopt a boy. I just thought, this is how far the Jew has destroyed morality in the world.
Well, right. He's used his ownership of the media to totally break down Christian society.
Yeah. And it truly is, as in the days of Noah, you know. It's become Sodom and Gomorrah all over again. It's all around us. So I don't know. I appreciate the example of Joseph, a young man who knew who he was in the world, realized he was a son of Jacob, son of Abraham, you know, surely had the view that, you know, Yahweh had called out these 12 tribes. And praise Yahweh. I mean, his line continued, you know.
Well, right, and by the suffering that we see, by the sin that we see in our world today, by the history of the last, even the last 100 years, when you read all of this end time prophecy and compare it to society, it's absolutely, you know, the white nations have always been the shining city on a hill, and it's absolutely evident that we are the children of God and that we are going to survive this. In the end, the Jew loses.
Exactly.
They all end up in the Volkswagen. That they all go into the lake of fire. That's the way it is. And we have to maintain our faith, and we have to stand strong in the face of this truth.
Amen. Exactly. We win in the end. It doesn't look good for us like right now, but the ending is already set. That's tremendously encouraging to me. The Jew is going to be swept out of this world by Yahweh's messengers of judgment.
Well, absolutely, and it doesn't matter what any of us do. The will of Yahweh will prevail.
Praise Yahweh. I agree totally. So this might be a good place to stop right here in the Testament of Joseph. Got about halfway through it. Leave the second half for when Eli gets back. I'll finish it up with him. And I enjoyed getting into it today. I know we kind of got off on a bit of a tangent there, but I just felt like sharing initially that document, and I am going to send it to you here when I get off the phone, just to establish what the mindset of these Jews were hundreds and hundreds of years ago, and it hasn't changed. It's just maybe become a little more hidden and sophisticated, and it's not all that hidden, really. So, praise Yahweh. We will be victorious in this, hopefully soon. And
absolutely. Without a doubt. Yahshua Christ is King of Kings. And thank you, everybody. This is William Fink for and Gregory Howard for Eli James. This is the Voice of Christian Israel. Eli will be back here next week with Greg Howard for the Testament of Joseph, Part 2. I expect Eli to be back here in time for Friday to continue the Jeremiah series with me, and Saturday the Revelation series. Yahweh bless you all. Good night.
Amen.